Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm itchy.
Hello and welcome to Red Men TV. That's the strangest introduction Red Men Radio number 80. Tom, it is.
No, it's not.
It's definitely 110%.
It's going to start. They'll be like, why are they both laughing? I wonder what happened just before this.
And we'll leave it in so that they know anyway. So it is episode number 80. Tom is itchy. And we have got our kickoff question to start us off from Dino622 on Twitter. You have to go on a reality TV show and perform a double act with a member of the current squad or coaching staff. Who would you pick and what show are you going on?
See, I had real trouble with this because I don't watch reality TV. I don't know. Is there a TV show where they go into a circus and do things like that? Because I really want to do Lion Taming with Alison.
Sounds like Britain's Got Talent.
Yeah, let's do it like that. Or I want to do Fire Breathing, but he'd burn his beard. So, like, we have to be careful. He'd have to, like, have a protective thing. Just something
Are you
cool
doing the
Alison.
Fire breathing as well?
I don't know how to do it, so, I mean, I'll spit gasoline into the air.
What are you going to do? You're going to be as Debbie McGee?
I'll be like Bez or whatever his name is, and just dance while
and
he
the
does
happy
it.
Happy Mondays?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, sounds.
I don't think we'll get very far.
So, what you're saying is, to do this double act, Alison's going to do the trick and you're going to stand there and look pretty.
Yeah, well, that's what I usually do. That's why I'm on all the shows.
Yeah,
is to look great.
Yeah, it's a shame that we started doing video podcasts, really. But we have, and you're here, so thanks very much for joining us. You can get this, of course, on iTunes and Spotify now as well. And if you are watching, leave us a nice review. So I've gone probably a little bit more tame, I suppose, like that one.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Lion tame and tame. There you go.
Had to explain the joke. There you go.
Well, you never know. Sometimes, yeah, okay, next. I've decided to go and I want to do this like a singing dancing combo.
Okay.
And I was thinking about who, and I started watching all the videos of the lads doing their initiations and stuff, because first of all I was thinking, I could sing some Oasis with Alison as guitar. You know, he likes a bit of Slide Away, and that's one of my favourite Oasis songs when they do it live. And I thought, that's a bit too easy. And then I realised that who is involved in all of those? Daniel Sturridge.
Yeah.
Because Daniel Sturridge gets up and is a part of things, and he doesn't, like, he steals the show, but it's not his song, you know what I mean? Yeah. And if I'm going to go for something, I want someone to give 100% effort 100% of the time. And Daniel Sturridge off the pitch can do that.
That's true. That is true. I thought you were going to go with Bobby Firmino, because I figured he just comes up with loads of mad dancers and it'd be off the cuff, and then you could be like the man-hater Firmino and steal his dancers live.
I could do that, you know, but I'm going to stick with Daniel Sturridge. And what we're going to do is we're going to go old school and we're just going to go Michael Jackson Thriller.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think, watch that.
Yeah, I think, you know, me and him would look great together.
So you're both Michael Jackson?
We're both doing the dance. We're doing all of it, mate, you know what I mean? Like, every single bit of the dance. And I think Daniel would enjoy himself.
Yeah.
And if Daniel's enjoying himself, I'm enjoying myself, Tom, and therefore we'd win Britain's Got Talent.
I reckon, honestly, you should probably win Britain's Got Talent.
You go.
You'd do the same routine every single time.
Golden
and
buzzer.
Still win.
We'll get the golden buzzer.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know what that is, do you? You're just nodding along.
Yeah.
Okay, enough of that. Let's get into the Liverpool stuff. So we'll start with the news in brief. Injuries. Hendo's got a tight hamstring. Klopp said it was not that he felt nothing, but he didn't feel a lot. He wanted to carry on. That's a good sign. We decided no. Hopefully it's nothing. Hopefully Jordan's okay. Keita, Klopp said, they are normal issues. It shouldn't be that long. It's not too serious. Naby, maybe we have to be a bit more patient, so probably not involved this week.
Yeah.
Mane's got his broken thumb. It shouldn't be that long. Both are not too serious. Sadio especially. We have to see how it develops in the next few days. And we know now that Sadio Mane is back in training. In other news, not quite as Liverpool-centric, there is a new format for the Club World Cup, Tom.
This is mad.
A 12-team format based on previous glories.
I love that.
So, no PSG.
No Man City.
No Manchester City.
You've got to have been a big club. You've got to have done things that'll rile a few feathers on it.
And here's the thing. It's not. I think what's happening is UEFA are looking at that and they're looking at their competitions and going, wow, you know, FIFA are looking at their competition and going, we need to get something here with the clubs, the big clubs, the one that's driving all the engagement, the one that's driving all the traffic. So what we can do is get the biggest clubs in world football into one competition. It's due to start. They're talking about it in the capital of Rwanda in the next couple of weeks, which I've been to, which is mad. And they're going to discuss this 12-team format. And you can get in there if you're not a historically big club. Mm-hmm. But we don't know what that could be based on yet. It's not been signed off or anything, but it's due to start in 2021 if it is signed off. So I'd imagine someone like a Manchester City will make it. Someone like a PSG will. Randomly, you need three European Cups, but Juventus will be in there anyway.
Well, again, I think it's what's going to drive the biggest revenue. If that's what they're going for, they're obviously going to put these newly big clubs in there because you've got to. Man City's fan base are not probably as world famous as like United's fan base is just all around the world in Asia. It's huge like Liverpool's is as well. And that's the thing is they want to build that as well, and that'd be a great opportunity for them being playing these massive ties.
And I think the Juventus chief executive is on the board, so they've put a little addendum in that says Juventus can go in because they've won two intercontinental titles as well as two Champions Leagues. Anyway, something focused more on Liverpool, and this is a mad story and it kind of passed me by at the weekend, but Ben Woodburn was back in action for the under-23s as they lost 3-2 to Derby, Tom. Mm-hmm. But he's on a season-long loan at Sheffield United.
It's mad because it says here the second and the manager's just like, well, we're playing well. There's eight other players in there who can't get game time either. And he said he's not special because he comes from Liverpool. Sound, you've got to work your way into these teams. And it is unfortunate for him because he's on loan so that we can see him progress and then he can get back into Liverpool's side. But they're being smart about it. They're saying, all right, he's not getting game time there. He didn't play for Wales. Let's get him back at the under-23s. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, I know they lost and stuff, but he needs to carry on playing football games. And it's a shame that it's not working out at his loan club, really, but it's whatever.
Yeah, listen, Sheffield United under Wilder, I think, are second in the Championship at the moment. So you're looking at that and you're thinking, fair play, they're playing well. They're doing well in the league. They're up there, aren't they? And Ben Woodburn can't get inside. It's disappointing that he can't get into the side more than anything else.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I would expect, you know, a Liverpool wonder kid to be able to walk into a Championship side. But I'm glad that Wilder's not holding him back in that regard, and that, you know, he's the one who said he could join up with Liverpool. He didn't get any minutes for Wales in the international break, but he's gone and he's played 65 minutes or so of football in the under-23s. And that's good. That's progressive, isn't it, management? You know, it's better than him sitting there doing nothing with the Sheffield United. Interestingly, Tom, Liverpool can recall him this season if they want to.
Maybe that's something that's going to happen. Maybe he'll just say to the club, look, I'd rather train with yous. If I'm not going to get game time there, I know I'm not going to get game time at Liverpool, I'd rather train there, and then maybe if you get further into a cup, I can play and see what happens if he comes off the bench. And it is a shame. You would think he'd break in, but he's still pretty young, isn't he? I mean, there's still plenty of time for him to develop. I think he'll probably stay there and fight for his place. I think he's good enough there. I really do think so. And that'll show a lot more about the person that he is. If he just goes, no, I don't want to be recalled. Let me play. Let me work my way into the side. And let's win the Championship with them.
Okay, I like that. Okay, on to the big topic. We've obviously got Champions League football back at Anfield. It's going to be a little bit strange in that there's not going to be any fans of the other club there, so no Red Star fans, but there will be Red Star fans in the city, I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
Tom, we pinpointed this when the groups was drawn, as these are the two games back-to-back in the centre, fixtures 3 and 4 in the Champions League of 6. These are the fixtures that we have to win. And listen, I know that generally their defensive record's really good, mm-hmm. but seeing Paris Saint-Germain slot 6 past them in the last game, we've got to go out there and prove a point, haven't we? This has got to be our Maribor of 2018.
It's got to be, and I think it's the perfect opportunity to do this. I mean, obviously a lot's riding on it, but at the same time, not a lot's riding on it in my mind. We have to go out there and win, but...
You say there's not a lot to ride on it, but if we lose
or draw,
you know, we're in a difficult spot because Napoli at home could go either way. Paris Saint-Germain away could go one way or the other.
Maybe I missmoked there then, or maybe it is. Maybe you're right, they are two must wins. To be honest, we did the Umbu and I kind of sat there and went, oh yeah, we'll beat them. And then there was a really good comment on there, top comment that I've pinned there. So if anyone wants to go and see that, it's up there. Really in-depth knowledge about it. And he's basically talking about them and saying who their best players are. Interestingly, he says, hey, look, their best player is Marco Marin.
Oh yeah, who's Chelsea.
He's a doubt now. I was reading it before. So their best player isn't there. They've got a few under injury issues. So... it's a perfect chance. Apparently, they're not very good on the wings in terms of pace. That's what we have as our strength, you know what I mean? Overlapping as well, not even our front three. So it's one of them where we've got the quality there. Let's just go out and show it.
I think we have to, don't we? I mean, I did mention it is going to be a strange atmosphere at Anfield. It will... I don't know. Which way do you think it's going to go? Do you think it's going to be better because there's no away fans, or worse?
I think it's not really going to matter. We're going to sing our hearts out because it's a Liverpool Champions League at Anfield, and that's what Anfield is. It's always been that way, and it's always fun having someone to bounce back off, but me and you are going to be in the cup. It's not going to stop us singing. If anything, it's going to make us want to make it louder because there needs to be an atmosphere in the ground. We're going to sing for 90 minutes like we always do when we're in the cup, so there's a lot of people there that will do that. I'm interested to see that when we score, how the other stands react. Because I know the Annie Road's brilliant as well.
And the Annie Road's normally sort of curtailed slightly by the fact that it's difficult to sing when there's another set of supporters. That Annie Road end, I've been in that Annie Road end, I've been in that Annie Road end for big games. In fact, the Dortmund game in the Europa League, I was there, and that was one of the best atmospheres I've ever been in. And we still had the Dortmund fans next to us, and I couldn't hear them, but I was in the corner. It could be that the Annie Road end rivals the cop in this game, I suppose, couldn't it?
Imagine if we're like bouncing off each other. There's so many opportunities here for us to have a laugh with it as well. Some chants going, you are invisible and all that. I don't know, it's kind of...
I'm glad you're not the songwriter.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really bad at doing them, but I'll sing if it's funny, you know what I mean? There's loads of opportunities where I kind of want to watch it back and see what they... because all the crowd noise, you know what I mean? They make sure that the aways are usually louder, weirdly, you know, they turn their mics up a little bit. I just want to hear the whole of Anfield. It's going to be a weird thing.
And the fact that Liverpool have given, you know, I think around about 1,000 tickets have been put up to sale for 17 to 21 year olds as well.
It's brilliant.
I think that's really good. So you could get this real sort of edgy Anfield Road end where there's a load of young lads and girls who don't get to go to the match a lot who are now able to go and just sing their heart out for a Champions League game that they wouldn't ordinarily be there for, which is going to be wicked. Onto the football then, Tom. It is time for the front three to shine, is it not?
Yeah, it is, and I've said before on a few things, we are clicking in terms of positional things, we're clicking in terms of how when we're choosing to break on people in terms of the counter-attack and how we're choosing to overload and stuff like that, but the final ball's just been off. That's what we need to do. We need to get one goal, two goals, get comfortable, and then just start showing ourselves that we're good enough to play these final balls. It seems like we're a bit timid, we're second guessing ourselves. Let's not do that. Get an early one and just go out there and maul a team. I know it's a bit disrespectful if you're going to do that, but keep going.
Nah, run the score up.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to, especially with PSG obviously having beaten them 6-1 as well.
And the game, obviously, PSG v Napoli could decide which way this group goes as well. You know, PSG at home in this one. I think it's important that Liverpool try and get back to that front three play. And I mentioned it earlier at the top of the segment that I wanted this to be our Maribor of 2018. I think that's what we should be aiming for. We should be looking at this now and saying, this is the time where we can get on and kick on. You know, Salah scored at the weekend. Can he get another two goals in a week? If Jurgen Klopp can, Tom, are you playing all of the front three?
I think you've got to. Again, it's all about the confidence and pushing that on for the Premier League as we move on. This is the easiest round of fixtures for a little bit. We've got through the hard part. We've slugged through that. We've had to defend when we've had, like, when we've needed to. You saw the Napoli away. Look, we were terrible, but we obviously set to defend because we knew it was going to be tough. These are the games where you go all out and you may as well put your best, your front foot forward with your front three. Like
nice.
That, and you've got to. That's yeah, you've got to, and I think it'll pay dividends. What about you?
I would absolutely 100% be putting all front three out, and you know I don't care about Mane's broken thumb. I do, but I don't at the same time.
Fine,
a yeah. broken thumb for me for a footballer is not an injury you should be missing games for.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, I mean, I don't know what the rules and the regulations are with wearing like stuff, but I mean, you know, Petr Cech's been wearing a head guard for how many years? I've seen people wearing casts and stuff like that before in the 90s. You've got to be able to put something on there that protects that thumb. And Mane just has to play a little bit smarter for me.
It will be strange if he goes over on it. That's going to be a bit worrying because, I mean, it's not an injury that should affect you, but if you've got a throbbing pain because someone's tripped you over and you've put your hand down first, that's going to be something that you're going to be thinking about. Honestly, I think Mane's a good footballer. He's going to put that out of his mind. He's one-on-one with the goalkeeper. He's not going to be thinking about his thumb. So I agree. Just get him on the pitch.
And then for me, you know, we talked about it a little bit on the build-up show, but I think this could be a really key game for Fabinho and his development into this Liverpool side as well. And what I mean by that is, you know, we talk about the pace of the Premier League so often, don't we? And, you know, I think a home game against the side that you should probably be beating in the Champions League, if you harbour ambitions of going far in the competition, certainly, this is the type of game where he can come in, he can settle himself a little bit. I think it's difficult with 20 minutes against Huddersfield in a game where we needed to stem the tide almost as well, because, you know, they had more possession than us. Yeah. They had 58% possession to 42% in the second half of the Huddersfield game. So he was really brought on there. We changed the formation. His passing accuracy wasn't great. You know, he completed 7 passes, I think, in his 21 minutes at 58%.
Yeah.
That's not good enough for a centre midfielder at Liverpool. Not good enough for a side who wants to dominate the ball at home. I think now, given a little bit more time, maybe a little bit more space, a slower pace, he can really go on and show us what he's got and show us whether I'm right in that he's offering more than a 6, or show us what he does in the 6.
Yeah, I kind of want him to do, and this might sound counterintuitive, I want him to do exactly what Jordan Henderson does. Just have a game where he literally just passes it side to side, backwards, retains possession, maybe sprays a ball over the top every now and then. And yeah, people go, oh, why is he doing this? Why is he not playing like this expansive football? And you just go, because he's developing his way into this team. You've got to start somewhere. Just do that. Add the frills later. And this is the perfect opportunity for me where we're going to have a lot of the ball. We're at Anfield. There's going to be no away fans to give him grief if the ball goes out of play. It's all going to be, come on, heads up, let's go. Even if we concede, let's go. It's fine, you know what I mean? We're still going to be behind you. So I think it's the perfect opportunity. And look, maybe he'll shock me. Maybe he will literally just start striding out of midfield. We'll know. One of the other midfielders will just dip in, let him go forward, and he'll play a through ball to Salah, who'll score.
We saw him do that. We saw him take on a man at centre field against Huddersfield, didn't we? Where he kind of had no rights to.
Mm.
But it reminded me, and I don't want to. I think I've drawn this comparison before of like a Yaya Toure when he was in his pomp for Manchester City. That sort of. It's almost disrespectful to the opposition. It's like, I shouldn't be trying to take you on here. I'm in my half. It's about halfway line. I've got an easy pass on, but I don't respect you and I'm going to run past you.
Yeah.
And that would fucking piss me off on a football field, to be honest with you, if he did that. And it would also be what endears me to Fabinho as a Liverpool fan.
Yeah, I mean, imagine he just runs up there. You look at what made Robbo just be loved by all the fans. It was just out of character. Never seen anyone do it before, just storming up the pitch and showing heart and desire and getting up there. And we responded to that. We went, that's exactly what we want from a football player. It'd be great just to see him just do that. But for me, I want him to just look defensively solid. Some of the tackles he was putting in against Huddersfield were brilliant.
With
even
his
go-go
gadget legs.
Yeah, he's stumbling on the floor and then his leg just appears and takes the ball away. And it's a clean tackle as well. It's not taking any of the man. You just, bang, I know where my foot needs to go. And it would be really nice to have someone that could do that in the middle of the park. Jordan Henderson's very much an interceptor. And he's a good tackler, don't get me wrong. Emre Can was good in terms, he was strong and just slid in and got it. It'd be nice to have someone else who's a bit different and, sort of, because he likes to take a yellow card, he likes to take the professional foul in their half, but he's so clean at tackling from what I've seen so far. It'd be really nice to see, oh, Red Star on the attack. Oh,
Fabinho's leg stops it again.
Again, exactly. So, I can't wait to see what he can produce.
Okay, we did a focus on Fabinho, actually, on this week's Stats and Tactics show. Now, the clip we've got isn't around Fabinho, but I did analyse his role in the side. What was the clip about again?
Joe Gomez.
Joe Gomez, right. Okay, I thought Joe had a brilliant game against Huddersfield, and here's a little clip to tell you why.
I wanted to look at this first and foremost because I was interested to see who Joe Gomez was passing to and whether we'd see anything different between him and Trent Alexander-Arnold, and we didn't. What we saw was a very Trent Alexander-Arnold-like performance from Joe Gomez. We think of Joe Gomez as being this defensive right-back when he's played there, and I think that's a bit harsh, to be honest with you. You can see here, the most passes he's made was into Mo Salah. 11 times he played the ball into Mo Salah. I think that's a really, really cool piece of knowledge. 6 times to Dejan, 6 times to Jaden, 5 times to Daniel. I think that's really important. We're going to look at some of those passes a little bit later on. But I thought he did really well at not just, when he's in trouble, turning back and hitting Dejan Lovren as the right centre-back. I think he did really well with moving the ball forwards. If we were looking at packing stats, he'd be taking players out of the game, playing through the midfield into the striker's feet or into the right winger's feet in Mo Salah.
So there you go. That is the clip from this week's Stats and Tactics. So we do this after most Liverpool games, definitely once a week. Sometimes it's a little difficult with the double game weeks, but I'm really enjoying this series. I've done 11 episodes so far, and some of them are evergreen, I feel like. And, you know, it's one of our subscribers' most liked shows. We do other shows like the Reds News Roundup. We'll be discussing a lot of the news in brief that we've talked about today and the other issues that have cropped up both on and off the field. We do the final word after each show. £5 a month. Get over there and subscribe. We've got some great things upcoming on the website. Brand new website, of course, as well. But right now, we'll get back into the second major topic for discussion. And Tom.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Excuse me. And Tom, that second topic for discussion really came about from looking at the league table.
Yeah.
On the aforementioned Stats and Tactics show, I looked at it and I thought, Jesus wept, there's 5 teams separated by 2 points here. Because I know that Liverpool, Chelsea and Manchester City have been so good this season. Yeah. And sneakily, Arsenal have won 10 on the spin. And Tottenham are on 21 points as well. Are we gearing up for the best Premier League title race we may have ever seen?
I think so. And it's weird because if you look at every single one of them first teams, they're top class. every single, if each fan could put down their top 11 and then just pit that against each other, they are some very, very good games. Every single one of the managers for the top five are impeccable, like, just in terms of tactically astute, just being not afraid to do things, change things up. They have their own styles, which, that's the best thing about the Premier League, is we have some of the best managers in there as well as top players. It's really annoying that it's happening now, and even though it's still happening, Man City is still unbelievable as well. But it's, this is what the Premier League's about. We've had the top three, at the top three in terms of, it was United, Arsenal and Liverpool for a while. Then Liverpool,
you're talking 90s now, exactly, aren't you? Yeah?
Then Liverpool dropped off a bit, and it was them two just going at it. And I'm really happy to see a resurgence in terms of, look, it means something now. If you win the Premier League, you are genuinely the best. Teams like Leicester couldn't win it again. And I know Leicester were fantastic, but genuinely, these five teams are too good now. I don't think that happens again.
I look at it and as you were talking then, I started to think about the different managers as you were mentioning them. And, you know, you look at Pep and you look at Klopp and Sarri and Emre and Pochettino. And I feel like there's a changing of the guard. And I think I said this in February to Stephen Howson when we were doing that video for Sport, how I felt that Mourinho was a bit more of a dinosaur and the league's moved on. And
yeah,
looking at the top five in this table, I think I've been proved right on this. I think, you know, none of those managers there, you would say, play defensive football. Now, Liverpool's defensive record has been much better this season, but we certainly, our natural game isn't to play defensive football in the same way as a Mourinho or anything, is it? You know Pep Guardiola's going to come out and try and score goals. I mean, listen, they're free scorer, aren't they? They've scored 26 in 9, which is incredible. And then, you know, us and Tottenham only 16 goals, but Arsenal 22 goals. 20 for Chelsea. Just focusing on Chelsea and Arsenal though, Tom. Are we going to see a drop-off from these two managers and their teams? You know, Sarri at Chelsea, they look dangerous, but yeah, maybe they've not got the centre-forward to have a proper title challenge over the full 38-game season. Arsenal look a little bit the opposite. They look like they can score goals on anybody, yeah, but can they keep tight at the back?
Yeah, it's strange because when they first came in, I was like, well, pretty new managers, you know what I mean, trying to come in, corral the team again. And I was like, okay, we're going to be all right for the season. This is kind of their break.
Down season almost.
No, it's not. And maybe we will. I think each one of them teams lower than us are a few injuries away from being, that's it. I think that's going to be really tough for them to carry it on. Man City have no worries about that. That's the problem.
They haven't even had the best player playing yet.
Exactly, and that's, it's mad, isn't it? And they're still scoring five. We are on the edge of that, I feel. We are
getting, in terms of injuries?
Yeah, because, I mean, we've got some, but we're okay. But, I mean, if we get four, we're done. Whereas I think Spurs, especially if they get two, that's, imagine Harry Kane and Dele Alli go out, then what, you know what I mean? They've got players
the
there.
The Spurs things interest me, Tom, because, you know, they don't sign anyone and they don't let anyone go in the summer. Mm. And that really is swimming against the tide almost, isn't it? And sometimes I think back to some of the more random non-fiction books that I've read over the years. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with swimming in a different direction. There's nothing wrong with, you know, going against the grain almost, because sometimes, you know, everybody else can be wrong. Yeah. You can still be right. And that's not to say that strengthening's a bad idea, but there's got to be something to be said for keeping your team together, showing confidence in them, knowing that a good young side like Pochettino has and going, I believe in you guys, yous can improve. And quite honestly, considering how many English players they had and how far we got in the World Cup, I thought they'd be much further back and probably out the race by now, and they haven't, and they're probably just going to improve.
And that's the thing, it's great. Everyone in there knows the roles. There's no, oh, new integration, oh, where should I be in this situation? Everyone knows where they should be because they did it last season and they did it in big games in Champions League. I remember they fell short, didn't they, at the end? But, like, they were a real force to be reckoned with. You saw them beating us, and sometimes you watch them and you're thinking, how are they? They have an extra man on the pitch. They have an extra man, and maybe that'll be the downside, is the fitness towards the end, because, look, we've seen that with us a few times when we've had the team, that first team, 13-14, was great, and then can you really rely on anyone else? That's the problem. I think they're all class. They all are really, really, really top players.
I'm going to focus a little bit on Liverpool now, and an area that I want to talk about is probably not something that we discuss too much on the shows. We might discuss it on the website occasionally, but one of the things is, and I think I might be right in saying this, but let me know in the comments section or on Twitter if you want to get in touch at Mr. Blood Red or at the Red Men TV. I wonder whether we've seen, hang on, I'll preface this. We've seen Klopp change his style every year. Mm-hmm. I think when he came in, first and foremost, we had a long run in the Europa League and obviously the Carling Cup or whatever it was called back then. The next year, we had a major drop-off in January. Yeah. Last season, we saw him rotate through the early part of the season to try and limit the damage during that December-January period. We've gone back this season to not rotating unless it's been almost enforced. I wonder whether the style of football that we're playing now is such that we don't need to rotate early on in the season because we have big games. And I wonder whether we're going to be a little bit fresher late on because we're not playing as an expansive game, because we're not pressing teams so high up the pitch. We're letting them get to our half, yeah, and we're not doing all of that running. Do you think that could be something that Klopp's evolved this side to do?
Very possibly. I think now that he can trust his defence, maybe we just go, all right, let's sit a bit deeper, and then we can trust our attack to score on the counter-attack. There's been a few times this season where we should have scored on the counter. You think back to that Napoli game, we could have just snatched that a few times. I mean, the passing was off. Think about the Huddersfield game towards the end. Bobby Firmino makes the right pass. We could have scored there. And I've got no problem with that, as long as we're being smart about it. We're not, I think you're right about the pressing, is we're half pressing, aren't we? We're just blocking the passing lanes off, and then we are just waiting for them triggers. Like, everyone in the team knows now, they know that's the trigger, let's go. And I think it's really nice to see Klopp trying new things, because we ultimately haven't won anything. There needs to be a progression. The progression now is to win something, because we've done everything to get there apart from doing it, you know what I mean? So I'm glad that he's not just stagnating with it, but it's Jurgen Klopp, so we know that he's going to always continue to take things on board, new ideas. It's probably why he's brought in so many new backroom staff. He's definitely changed some of his set-piece things, because the man's come in, the throw-and-take. Yeah, and he's just gone, okay, tell me, give me your advice on what to do here. He knows that he doesn't know everything, and that's the best thing about him.
I love that from a management point of view. I think there is no better manager in the world than one that knows what his strengths and weaknesses are and aren't. And I think, you know, you can push your ego to one side, and Jurgen Klopp certainly does that, because he's not a throwing expert, and he doesn't believe that he's a throwing expert, and I think that's brilliant. One of the things that always gets asked to us, and I don't think it's on the questions later on, but it is worth discussing, I think, sometimes. We still don't know what's happened with the brain. Buvac, mm-hmm, Klopp's right-hand man for 17 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are wondering whether Buvac not being there can be sort of aligned to the front three not playing well. What's your thoughts on that one?
I reckon it's just a coincidence. I really do. And I think we played some great football even after he'd left. We have played some great football this season. I don't know. Obviously, Klopp spoke very highly of him, and I was a bit dumbfounded when he'd left. But I don't know what he exactly did. Obviously, he was his advisor, and he helped Liverpool win games. He must have done. But, like, I don't know, he's brought in new people.
I look at this and I think to myself, if he's worked with Jurgen Klopp for 17 years, Jurgen's probably got a pretty good understanding of this system anyway.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the gegenpress was down to Buvac. I think if you read stuff that Klopp said over multiple years in articles and books, you will understand that he has got the utmost respect for Buvac in a working sense, certainly when it comes down to the pressing side of things. But there are coaches there now who can do just that.
Yeah.
You know, when Pep Linders left to go and coach last year his own side over in Holland, Klopp was gutted about that.
Yeah.
And it feels like you change the coach, yeah, there is going to be a little bit of change, but that's not necessarily, you know, there might be a dip right now, but in the future, given time and space to work, these players might just click and we might be better than we were before. I agree with you. I think it's a little bit of a coincidence right now. I think the pragmatism that we're shown in not conceding goals will change. Yeah. I think, you know, we will start to score goals. But let me know your thoughts if you're watching on YouTube in the comment section below. I'd be interested to hear everybody else's opinion on this one. Before we wrap up this section, I had a look at the top six, Liverpool's form against the top six last season, and I wondered whether this is the area that we need to improve most to win this Premier League this season. I think we've played three teams who you would consider our rivals this season. We've won one against Tottenham Hotspur. We've obviously drawn against Chelsea with that Daniel Sturridge goal, and we drew 0-0 against Manchester City. So we've won one and drawn two so far. Last season overall, we only won two. We drew four and we lost four. In previous years, Klopp's been very good in those top six battles and almost come out on top, but we weren't able to beat the teams further down the table. Is this year about marrying those two things up for you?
A tiny bit. I think we just need to cut the losses out. I mean, ultimately, I'm not too bothered. All I want is wins at home and draws away. That's the golden rule for me. That's what you go there for. You obviously sometimes that's not going to happen. You're playing against top sides here. I think we're good enough to win every single one of them. We really are, but then so are the others, and that's the hard part. I like I said, let's just focus on winning at Anfield and then playing as compact as we can away from home, and that. I think we've got that in us now. I think in the past you would have thought, can we be compact? No, let's just go at them again and keep the intensity up. Whereas now I really do feel like we can stifle teams, because there were so many times you'd come up against, let's say, a Man United and you go, we've come up against the low block system against, let's say, Stoke. And you go, well, we beat that, but we couldn't do it against United because they just had better players doing it. I think that's where we are now. We are the better players doing a low block.
And that would be interesting to see how we do in those fixtures. I think, you know, getting that result against Tottenham Hotspur is obviously absolutely massive.
Yeah.
Drawing at home to City didn't sit right with me at the time. It still doesn't. I do feel like we could have gone a little bit harder and tried to get the win in that one. So we're going to get into some of your questions now. These are taken from Facebook, from our Facebook subscribers group, from the website itself, from Twitter as well. And this one, I think, is from Facebook, and it's John Hopkins. Was there ever a time you lost belief in Liverpool or the direction they were taking? Perhaps an awful run of results, etc., etc.
I don't think I've ever lost belief in Liverpool ever since I've properly started watching them, which was in 04. But when Suarez left and our striker was Sterling, who did an alright job, but that season after 13-14 broke me. 13-14 destroyed me. Not the team. I knew they put in everything they could to get there, but just the feeling around it,
like a bad breakup, proper bad breakup.
And it still hurts to this day. I can't think about that season. There were so many great moments, and I just can't think about it because it hurts so much. So it wasn't losing belief, but it was more just real heartbreak for me.
I think for me it was obviously Hicks and Gillette. I think that era of being a Liverpool fan, we'd started the channel not long before, and you know, a lot of people wouldn't have watched the channel back then, but we marched to Anfield with everybody else. We wore the Standards Corrupted shirt because I truly believe that Liverpool were in the wrong hands.
Yeah.
You know, the way that Hicks and Gillette ran the football club into the ground, you know, we were a few hours away from,
it's mad, isn't it,
not existing anymore. And everything else for me pales in comparison to that. I feel that heartbreak of 13-14 like I did 2008, 2009, and like I did in every other season that we've come close. But nothing comes closer to the realisation that this club might not exist anymore, and there would be a ginormous gaping hole in my life that was Liverpool Football Club. So for me, it's never anything but that, and I never want to have to flirt with that ever again.
Mad question. If that would have happened, Liverpool ceased to exist, what do you think you would have done? Would you, because there would have been a club started from the ashes, would you go to lower tier football and be watching them? I think a lot of people would.
I think
have.
I would have, yeah. And I think what I realised is I enjoy football a lot. Like, it sounds stupid, but I actually enjoy being there and watching the football a lot. Like, and you know, they're a different category of player, and everybody loves to watch a world-class player. But one of the best games of football I've been to see in recent years was when we went to watch Dulwich Hamlet play in London against some fucking other no-mark London side in some fucking 17th division of English football. And it was absolutely superb. Yeah. Like, and you know, we've been down a couple of times to see AFC Liverpool. I've enjoyed watching that as well. And hearing the tackles that you just can't hear at Anfield, and you know, being part of something smaller again, I would have felt like I've got this huge thing. I'm not going to support another Premier League club.
No.
Let's go for the ride. And that's probably what I would have done. And that's why I do like what the, you know, what a lot of the lower league clubs, you know, AFC Liverpool, City of Liverpool are doing. And I wish I had more time to go and watch some of that stuff. This one's from Emil, a regular on our website, who says, you can mind control Jose Mourinho for 10 seconds during his next press conference. What would you make him say?
This is really, really tough.
Yeah.
Do you want to...
And libelous, I think, at times. So yeah. Let's take the libelous shite out of there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, do you want to end this man's career? Do you want to potentially end his life? Do you want to destroy his life? Because you could do a lot of things while he is at a press conference. You know what I mean? I've just gone with, I donate my severance money to LFC, so if he did get that'd clear it all, so he just gets sacked on the spot because they're not asked about sacking him. I mean, you could do a number of things. Leave them in the comments. We will know which ones they're answering to. But yeah, there's so many.
I think, you know, for me, I would like him to say that Garcia scored.
Yeah,
I'd love him to say that. I'd like him to say that Rafa Benitez was always a better manager than him. Ooh, yeah. I think that would hurt him a lot to have to say. And maybe something about a certain lady being right would be in there as well, if you know what I mean. So there we go. Yeah, but as Tom says, leave yours in the comments section. I'll be really interested to hear what you've got to say on that one. Jonathan Cook, pick six dinner party guests from current footballers or managers. They can never have been associated with Liverpool. I want to talk to Klopp. I want to talk to Kenny Dalglish. I know he's not allowed and all that. I have picked one that's not a current one, just so you know. I'm just throwing out there, I'm cheating, but I really want to talk to this guy and I may not have another opportunity.
Well, do you want to start? Because I've answered the first two.
Okay, I'll go with Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, I've got him.
I think he'd be so interesting. Yeah. And having watched All or Nothing, he's a completely different man to what I expected. And yeah. I'd love to interview him in any way, shape or form. And if a dinner party is the way, then a dinner party is in fact going to be the way.
You think about the clubs he's managed. Like, comes Barca, then Bayern, and now he's at Man City. The top clubs in his leagues, and he's kept them there and more. You know what I mean? I want to just speak to him and just be like, how do you... You are one of the... Nearly regarded as one of the best managers ever. How does that sit with you? How do you kind of push that aside and carry on with your job? It must be mental.
It must be the drive and the determination that these fellas have. And I think that's the running theme through all of the all of the things that I've picked. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't pick a player. Did you?
I did.
I'm not interested in the players.
No, same.
You know what I mean? I'm really interested in the managers and how you control that type of a group of egos and all that type of
stuff. After being a player as well, with Guardiola there as well.
That's it. And I've picked three former players that I know of. I'm unsure whether one was, but he may well have been. Okay, my next one's Arrigo Sacchi.
Okay.
Almost a godfather of zonal marking, I suppose. And I don't mean zonal marking in your area from a corner. I mean zonal marking across the football pitch, which is really adopted by every team now. You know, it used to be where it would be man marking all the way across, and there are so many acolytes of Arrigo Sacchi that I respect, Rafa Benitez being one of them, Jurgen Klopp being another, and so many great managers over the years. Carlo Ancelotti is one of these guys as well. I'd love to sit down and have a conversation. I think he's just early 70s or something now, but, you know, AC Milan, he managed them over two stints. I think he managed Real Madrid at one point, or maybe he was a director of football there. So you've got a wealth of stuff that you could sort of tap into. Who's your second?
Well, because it said current footballers and managers, I kind of closed it down. So I was going to pick whoever, but I've picked Seydorf, Clint Seydorf. Really, really want to speak to him. I was listening to, he did something in a university, I can't remember. If you type in Clint Seydorf University Talk, he basically did a talk with loads of university students.
That's how it works.
Yeah, exactly, and it was fantastic. I was listening to this man talk about respect and how all the teams he's played for, he was talking about leadership, and he was like, it's not about that, it's about being a good person, you know what I mean? And like bettering the people around you by being a good person, and just the way he's so humble. This man was one of the best footballers ever. He's won so many amazing things, part of so many amazing groups of people, and he's just sat there going, yeah, you can do that too.
This is a fella who, I don't know whether people know this. I think I might be right in saying he's one of the only players to win a Champions League for three different clubs.
I think he might be.
He won it at Ajax, he won it at AC Milan, and he won it at Real Madrid. Yeah. So there's a guy who knows how to win at different football clubs throughout his career. I mean, what an interesting person. Good shout. Very, very good shout. Zizou.
Yeah, I've got him, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, fucking hell. Why wouldn't you want to sit down and eat your dinner off his baldy head?
Mate, I would genuinely... I want to find out... Because he left football in such a mad way in terms of the headbutt. And that kind of overshadows everything in the same way that Gerard Slip kind of does the same thing. But you think back on just what he was. The I can't remember what you call it. What you call it when you roulette in the pitch? When you know the spin that he did that he was famous for? I don't know what it's called, but where he sticks his foot.
It's called the roulette,
I don't know. But that move and the way he moved around the football pitch, beating some of the best players in the world, just the utter control he had of a football.
He was the best. He was the best. Like, I mean, he played for that Juventus side that I absolutely adored in the 90s. And, you know, he was obviously outstanding and one of the Galacticos at Real Madrid. And the goal he scored in the Champions League final, slightly better than Bale's. Maybe my red tinted glasses are on there a little bit.
It's better because he meant it. He meant that 100% to go into the top bin. I'm sure Bale meant it to go around the goal. But overhead kicks are inherently less in control than him planting his feet and swinging his weak foot and sending a top in. I'm sorry.
Okay. I like your bravado on that one. I'm going to back you on it. I think, you know, he's done some stuff. And the fact that he's managed to win three Champions League titles at Real Madrid as well. Isn't it? Excuse me. Another one, for slightly different. Diego Simeone.
Yeah, I've got him as well. He's just mental.
He's boss. He's incredible. You know, he's a defensive style manager. I told you I was watching that video of him and they were like practicing hoofing the ball out at Atletico Madrid, and he gets them to practice hoofing the ball out under pressure. Guardiola's there with his rondos and his tic-a-tacas and all this type of shit, and Simeone's literally outing the ball in training. That's boss, and yet he's so successful with it.
But it's something that every team's going to do at least once. You may as well train what you're meant to do, like he's trying to do. Where do you set yourself as soon as the ball's gone out? And you think of some of the defensive players that he's got there, Godin, and you there's obviously more that I can't remember off the top of my head, but he had some amazing players there, but they're all amazing because of him as well.
Yeah.
They have the inherent tactical awareness and the skill to be able to put it onto the pitch, but he's gone, do that, and that's why they're so good. And even when they move to like the Uruguay again, Godin, he's so good there because he's played with these, you know what I mean, amazing players in this manager.
Who did he play with, Godin? He's played with loads, lad.
Loads of people. Leave a comment saying how stupid I am. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to pick Joachim Löw as an outcharge shot.
Okay, that's an interesting one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want him picking his nose at my dinner party, if I'm perfectly
scratching
honest with
balls.
You. And all that type of thing. And sniffing his hands and all that. Like, I'm not into that, Joachim, so we're going to have to set some ground rules if you come in. But a World Cup winner. And I haven't got a World Cup winner on there.
Oh, really? Wow.
No, so Sacchi never did it, Pep hasn't done it, Zizou hasn't done it, Simeone hasn't done it. So I wanted somebody who's been through something, and, you know, he built that Germany side up from they were nowhere in world football at the time, and he was there for a long period of time. And he's not only had the highs, but he's also had the lows after the highs. And I think he'd be a really interesting conversation.
Joachim Lowe's. Is that your six anyway?
No, Mourinho, but I'm poisoning him in on the pudding course. What?
No, you know what? Everyone would agree with you on that one. I would agree. So my last three are Omri. I really feel like just speaking to him about just how good of a player he was. He was one of them where you go back and watch his compilations and you don't really do him justice because it's just him scoring worldies constantly. But you think about, he came in as a winger, Arsene Wenger, early days, and he's just gone, no, you're a striker now, and he transformed the Premier League, really, didn't he? Mm. The next one's Luka Modric.
Good shout.
I really want to know what goes on in his head because he's played. He was like, for me, one of the original ones that I saw go from an English club to Real Madrid and just tear it up and show everyone how good. Obviously, there was a load more before that. Exactly, but you know what I mean. I didn't really care too much, to be honest with you. I didn't watch football, you know what I mean? So Modric, just being the player he is, he's unbelievable. Like, really, really good. And the last one is Diego Maradona.
How many have you picked there?
Well, seven, because Zidane was in there, but I didn't.
I mean, come on, no. You're not having Maradona.
No, alright, I'll change just, Modric for Maradona.
Alright, I know why you're having Maradona in there. You want to get the party started.
Yeah, I really want to see him go at the party table, like, he'd be mad.
Defo, he's got some white powders all over your glass dinner table, hasn't he? Why didn't I pick Maradona? That one, he'd be a great party
I'd
guest.
I'd love to meet him.
I'm not sure Pep and Saki would get on with him, but anyway, who gives a shit? It's Diego Maradona. Joe Allen says, and we spent far too long on that question, but it's cool. Yeah. Thank you, Jonathan. Joe Allen, not Wee Joe, said, Do you think a team can dominate the next decade the way Liverpool used to and unfortunately Man United did? The less of that, the better. Or the same old constant drop-offs like Chelsea have done, especially, as I always say, great content. I'll answer this one first. I think it is possible.
Yeah.
I think it's going to become increasingly more difficult as time goes by. If it seems to me like at some point there is going to be, and it probably already has, there is a massive split between the top six and the rest of the league at the moment. I feel like a couple of years of dominance for Manchester City could mean that the top split from the top, you know, the top team, almost the cream splits from even the other top teams. And I think with given the vast sums of money now, teams are going to have to go about it a different way. I think, you know, this development style plus spending loads of money that Jurgen Klopp is trying at Liverpool will be one of those ways. I think Chelsea utilising the new manager and then the drop-off is going to happen at the same time. But I do feel like dominance isn't winning 10 leagues on the bounce. Dominance is winning 6 of 10.
Yeah.
And I feel like this Manchester City side, maybe a Liverpool side, could do this. And, you know, Chelsea are in the middle of it.
Yeah, I honestly think Man City are too good at the moment. And I think until Pep Guardiola leaves, they are going to show a period of dominance that I don't think is going to be rivaled. Obviously, in recent years, just purely because they're so consistent. I'll be interested to see what happens when David Silva leaves and company leaves and how that drop-off is, because they're so integral to that team. That's going to be their big test for City. These stalwarts of the team who have pulled them through so many times over and over and over and are still world-class. Once they've gone, have they got people in reserve? I know they do. Are they going to be good enough? Maybe not. And that's going to be their big test.
Interesting. Andrew Haas says, is Tom really 23? Because this is blowing my mind.
Yeah, I feel like I look a bit younger now because I've had a shave and longer hair.
Let me know in the comment section whether you think Tom looks younger now because he's had a shave. And what's your hair?
And I've grown it out. It's getting cut today, though. Hopefully, if we have time. I don't think we will have time, but it's getting cut. I've got sunken eyes because I'm tired all the time, and I grow a beard, so I look older. I've been told that I was like 34 before. Yeah. Genuinely, first time people meeting me, people who were 34 have been like, "Yeah, you're 34." You, I'm like, "What? I don't understand it. I don't get it." Etc. etc.
That it?
Yeah. Do you want me to explain why I don't look 23?
Fucking whine on like a fucking old man, to be fair. Like,
yeah.
Owen Balakistan says, you wake up, it's Diego Costa climbing through the your window in a frog costume. What do you do, Tom Dutton?
I absolutely shit myself and then I go live on Facebook. So at least, I'm guessing he's going to kill me. He's in my room in a frog costume. Why else would he be in there except to stab me? So live on Facebook, everyone can at least watch me. And it'll go all over the internet, and I don't know, it'll be funny, won't it?
I'm going straight to my wardrobe, getting my wife's bow and arrow out of the wardrobe. It's a big fucking 6 foot motherfucker. If you want to see it, it's on one of the vlogs from last season, the year before, maybe when we went to see Newcastle. The bow and arrow, that is, not Diego Costa in my bedroom. That's not on YouTube anywhere. Or is it?
Yeah.
And I am going to shoot him with my bow and arrow, first and foremost, and then I'm nicking his frog costume.
Okay, you're putting a lot of confidence in yourself being able to get to a wardrobe, find the bow and arrow, put the bow and arrow in your hands, ready to shoot, turn around, shoot Diego Costa, who's running around in a frog costume. I mean, if you can do it...
You don't run around in a frog costume, Tom. In my head, his frog costume, right, limits him. He's not merely a man in a skin suit.
Okay.
He is now full on
frog. He is
having to do this. Frog costume. And I have pure got time.
That's even scarier. Now that you've put that in my head, Diego Costa doing that that's gonna be my nightmare, is that?
Good. And well, you know what you need to do?
That's my Halloween costume.
Well, that's why I said I'm nicking the costume after the fact, like arrow hole or not, I'm having that bad boy off. Thanks for your question, Owen. At Bert Shesh, what's your opinion on Liverpool fans that aren't locals? Can I just say this? They're still Liverpool fans.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah. And in my experience, look, we've been over to Germany for the pre-season stuff, and I've met so many Liverpool fans from Germany who have come over to Liverpool since. I'm meeting some in the next week or so because I've made really good friends with them through football. That's a common language. Obviously, they can speak English, so that's also the common language.
That is the common language.
That is the common language, otherwise you can talk. But...
Well, are you just going for a game of footy with them?
I've done that before. I've just been like, football? And then we've played a game of football, and then we've said... He said, out of wide, and I've said, in a bit, lad.
Where was this?
It was when I went to Portugal the other week.
You played football with some randomers in Portugal?
One randomer, and he was really loads better than me.
Did you tell him you were 23/34?
No, but doesn't matter.
How old was he?
I don't know. We didn't talk. He was French, man. He was just
how did he look?
We had a romantic night, okay, playing football in the sunset.
Yeah.
And then his bear came.
Oh, mate, at least someone came.
Exactly. But no, look, every time I've been over there and spoke to them, they are just as big fans. And I don't think it matters, to be honest. I understand the local side of it, and you need that in there. You need a core of people like that, but you also need expanding. That's why we're better than Everton. They go on saying, with the local club. Fuck being local club. I want to be able to go to America and speak to people who support Liverpool and America. That's amazing to me. I want to be able to speak to people who love this club for different reasons, having different perspectives, and then you can take that on board. That's my opinion anyway.
And you know what? I fully agree with that, and I fully back it. And you know, I haven't done this for so long now. You know, we're into our eighth year of doing Red Men TV and stuff, and speaking, and not only meeting, but speaking to people in comments on Twitter, on Facebook and everything about this football club. And you know, it's interesting to find out why people are interested in this club, why this club, you know, what's the story behind it. People always say, oh, it's your Champions League in 2005. I could probably count on one hand how many people have actually told me that. There's always been something else. There's always been a link there through family or another big game, or maybe it was a big loss.
And
maybe it's the city itself. Maybe it's the politics of the city. Maybe it's the fact that Liverpool's a poor city that's opened itself up to people from different generations, from different backgrounds and cultures for years and years. And we've had our back to the rest of England.
Yeah.
And for some reason, we just seem to get on. Now, there are a minority of Liverpool fans who think, you know, they don't want that, and I don't agree with that opinion at all. But what also strikes at the heart of me is I'm a huge NFL fan, and I would be the biggest fucking hypocrite in the world to say that no, you can't support Liverpool. I support the Minnesota Vikings from Minneapolis, for goodness sakes, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I feel an affinity with that city. My favourite band's from that city as well as my favourite American football team in the Hold Steady. And I don't know, there's something about it, and there's the words that the Hold Steady, and they talk about these places in Minneapolis, and it reminds me of Liverpool and of my time growing up, because I think, you know, Craig Finn is one of the greatest songwriters of our generation, and every song I listen to, I can park back to something from my childhood and me growing up, and I don't know, there's just something cool about it.
I do get the local fans, like, I get it.
You need locals in the stadium, you do need local fans, and you want the next generation of fans to be there and show that support.
But the reason why you want that is to teach people who aren't locals what the culture is. That's why you want them there. You don't want them there to exclude themselves. You want them there, and you need them there, because you need to go, no, this is the way. And it's something about having perspectives, but you need to hold the core of, no, you sing for You'll Never Walk Alone. There's a reason why you do that. It's because we do that. And if you want to be a part of what this is, you've got to follow in some of the traditions.
That's it. And listen, there's some Scousers out there that could learn a thing or two about that as well, to be honest with you, because I go to the match so many times. It's not just... I see Scousers who don't sing You'll Never Walk Alone.
It's more people chatting to their mates than people with cameras out filming it, you know what I mean, who don't sing, in my experience. And the people who I've had so many times when I've been sat at the back of the cop singing my heart out, and there was two Asian fellas sat next to me, and by like the start of it, they were a bit reserved, and by the end of it, they were up, and they didn't know the words to all the songs, but they knew the Liverpool ones, Liverpool, Liverpool, and they belted that out every single chance they could, because they enjoyed it. And I know for a fact they fell in love with this club more for being included. No one turned around and went, what, sorry, what are you doing? Everyone went, yeah, let's go. We're the same family.
That's it. And you'll never walk alone. That's what it's all about, isn't it? It says it in those few words. And one of the things that I would say, and to anybody watching it who's planning on coming over to Anfield for the first time, we really don't like half and half scarves.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We absolutely think they are the pits.
Yeah.
Now, if you really... I get why they're popular, to be honest with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, do you?
Because it's a memento from that game.
Yeah.
But a memento works the same. It just doesn't happen to have the club crest of the other team on. Get yourself a scarf.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or if you want a half and half scarf, put it in a bag.
Yeah, put it away.
Wear something that just says Liverpool yeah. on it. And I think you'd have a much better time and you'd feel much more included, because those half and half scarves drive people up the fucking wall.
I don't like them, to be fair. I'm not gonna have a go at anyone who has them. Like, I'll see someone with them and I'm not gonna be like, oh, what are you doing? Put that. But like, I'm just like, no.
Yeah,
come on.
Don't be holding a half and half Man United Liverpool scarf. Like, you know,
that's the
mean?
Worst. That's the worst.
Or do
one.
But cut it in half and throw the Man United half in the bin.
Yeah,
and then just have a half scarf. In which case, you may as well just buy a full Liverpool scarf.
Or buy United one and set it all on fire.
Last question of this before we move on to the subscriber special Q&A podcast, just available on the website, where we continue these type of questions. We've got so many good ones coming in as well. But the last question of this is Niall Kavanagh. Would you be up for a five-a-side game against Goldbridge and co? And who would be in the side? Yes.
Who'd be on his team? I don't know.
Goldbridge World?
I don't watch him, to be honest.
I don't know. Listen, Goldbridge takes a lot of stick on Twitter and Facebook, and he thinks we've got something against him. Do you know what I mean? And we don't.
No.
You know, we laugh at all of his memes in just the same way that every Liverpool fan laughs at him. I'd be 100% up for playing him in a five-a-side game.
We'd win.
I'd hope so.
No, I think we would.
No ringers.
No ringers. You can't be bringing ringers in. No. That's why I'm saying who play for them, because I don't know who does
well,
videos.
Well, United stand is, they've got, is it Flex or Fleck or something like that as well. And, you know, they've got a few others over there now. And you know what? They're doing really well on YouTube, so fair play to them.
Our team's good.
Well, who is in your team? Because I could only pick four.
Well,
for this crunch tie.
It's Paul and Goal.
Yeah.
Then Jamie Holden.
Jamie.
There it is. Know. Yeah. Jamie's very good at football, by the way.
Yeah.
Get Jamie in there, holding it. And then I think Si's on the right because he likes to get up and down the wing. You're the link between the defence and the midfield. You're a hard tackler, and I feel like you can play a good pass. And I'll just kind of roam around the front. I'm not a striker by any means, but I think I could do a job.
Okay. I've picked a different side to you. No Si, unfortunately, on my side.
Oh, really?
I've gone Ben.
Okay, yeah.
Ben's a good player.
He's a good player.
I'm going to use him as the centre forward. I will pick Paul in goal, me and Jamie at the back, and you'll be that linchpin between the midfield and the attack. I'll be honest, I totally forgot about Jamie, and I'm sure you probably forgot about Ben.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah, Ben's a good player.
He's a good player.
I was going to pick Amy above Si, and I'm so sorry.
You know what? She'd be good apart.
Amy's a good player.
She's got a done-in knee, so
no,
we couldn't play.
No.
But
so I'm getting into the side then in that instance.
I'm yet to see her play. She says she's good. She's a right back though, so she would be taking Si's spot in that team, to be fair. So she's probably
just for the record, are you gonna put Amy ahead of Si now?
On principle, because I've known Si longer, no.
Oh, you little bitch.
Look, Si's my friend.
Si's your BFF.
Yeah.
And there we go. That's how we end the show. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for subscribing to the Redmen TV on YouTube. If you want to catch the Q&A section of the show, then do go over, subscribe to the website. It's £5 a month, first month free. If you like it, keep it. If you don't like it, fuck it off. Cheers for watching. So.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com